Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The voices in his head may not be real, but they have some really good ideas. The Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Let's go.
We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
Just let me know when I'm on, all right?
Showtime.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Well, it's not only Columbus Day, it is the day that the Nobel Peace Prize has been given out. And once again, if you haven't heard this, the winner of the Nobel Prize in economics has deep concerns about income inequality and handed out today to British-American economist and professor at Princeton University. He won the 2015 Nobel Memorial Prize in economics for his work on consumption, poverty, and welfare. And I want to, and it's a great lead-in that that happened today, and the story is out there because our guest this evening is Professor Dacher Keltner. I'm sorry. Yes, Professor Keltner from Berkeley. He is the co-director of the Greater Good Science Center. Thank you for joining us, sir. I do appreciate it.
It's great to be with you guys.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I just want to reference this gentleman who won the Nobel Prize today.
Yeah.
He's talking about income inequality. And one of the things he said, unlike the British, Americans are not interested or they're disturbed by stories of the fat cats. And, you know, they rather approve of them. Your take on that?
Well, you know, that's really changing because we know income inequality has been rising for 40 years and it's, you know, it's at historic highs. And 20 to 30 years ago, Americans were not terribly concerned about the gap between the rich and poor. And today, in fact, you know, just recently in the last year, there are surveys finding that Americans think this is the central social issue, social problem facing our society.
And by the way, we'll see how this rolls out tomorrow in the Democratic debate. I'm really anxious to see it airs at beginning at 5:30 right here on KGO. So you, when I think about the Democratic Party, and usually it is 9 times out of 10 or almost 10 out of 10, Democratic politicians talk about inequality and, as you mentioned, redistribution. And a lot of times the other side would scream class warfare.
Right.
Yeah. And so how do you see that working?
Well, I mean, I think that it is true that Democratic policies tend to orient a bit to the people who are less well off, that have don't have health care, being paid very minimal amounts of money to do very hard work. And so the kinds of policies like Obamacare and minimum wage, raising the minimum wage, will be coming from Democrats. We also know from scientific studies that the wealthier the politician, you know, most of our senators are millionaires, 10 millionaires, et cetera. The wealthier the politician, the less they endorse policies that are good for the poor, like public education. So it is true that policies favoring the poor tend to come from Democrats. But what we know, and I think this is really important, and it's been well documented, for example, by Paul Pearson, my colleague at Berkeley, that the past 40 years there have been all these policies put in place, like tax changes to tax structure and so forth,
yes,
that have led to this inequality, and they've been championed by Democrats and Republicans. So it seems to be all politicians are acting in ways that increase inequality.
Professor Keltner, let me ask you this, and this would have been the case probably even a few years ago. Bernie Sanders runs, and he said the socialist word, and he'll say it again tomorrow night. He's a socialist. And even within the Democratic Party, for a long, long time, no one wanted to hear that song and dance. But here he is. I know he was an independent, but now he's, you know, he is what it is. He is what it is.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, socialist became a very bad word in the Reagan era for a lot of obvious reasons. And, you know, Drex, when you talk to 25-year-olds today, 20-year-olds who have been through this really deep economic recession, who have looked at how expensive college has become. I mean, I could work my way through a University of California education when I went to school. They have a different view, and they have a deeper appreciation of strong state. They are willing to sacrifice a bit for the public good. They aren't as leery of raising taxes a bit. They're a different population, and that's why Sanders is exciting them in a very big
way. I love that you're addressing that, because you're not talking to that demographic right now. You're talking to the older demographic. I mean, I think that you're probably talking to, you know, 35, 64, 30, 35 plus all the way until the end. And thank you for listening, everyone. I do appreciate it. So tell everybody what time it is with the Bernie Sanders youth vote.
What time it is?
Yes, I mean, because he is a socialist and he is about income redistribution.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of us understand that, and we don't get it.
We don't. And you know, the pendulum, you look at the big survey data the past 30, 40 years, like when I was 20, 30 years ago, it's like, this is the land of equality, upward mobility. And 30 years of hard data showing that most people, all the wealth of our society, most of it is going to the 1%.
Yes.
Most of us are working a lot harder today, hundreds of hours more a year than we did 30 years ago. We're not getting paid more. So the hard data have come in, and the younger generation is not biased by the illusions of the past. And they say, wow, you know, this income inequality, we got to work on it. I'm willing to pay more taxes to redress this issue, because the problems that follow it are serious.
Right, and I think that's really telling to the older demographic amongst all of us. And, you know, and by the way, let's go old school for a second. Mo money, mo problems. Is that really the truth here in America for that 1%?
More money, more problems?
Yes.
No, you know, there are a lot of stereotypes and illusions about the wealthy and the poor. So one of them, which I love, is, you know, we tend to think that there's suffering when you're well off and you're more likely to suffer depression.
Right, money doesn't make you happy, all of those.
Yeah, and that's not true. You know, money does make you somewhat more happy. The new Nobel economist, Deaton, was part of a very influential study on that theme. Money really matters for the poor. If a very poor person gets a raise of $5 an hour, that will very significantly change their health and well-being. And then, you know, the kinds of problems that my lab's been interested in that come with wealth are really surprising. So we're finding very wealthy people are less altruistic. They share less. They respond with less physiological activity when they see somebody suffer.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, so those are social problems that accompany greater wealth.
It's so true. And go ahead and talk about the social experiment that you did that was shown on NewsHour, where everybody was playing that game where everybody, pretty much 3 out of 4, had the same amount of wealth or a number, but yet somebody else had more. And the person who had more really didn't want to share with others. So the basic premise is money.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a study carried out in my lab by Paul Piff, now at UC Irvine, really brilliant guy. And you know, we did, you know, most people played Monopoly. You all start out with the same amount of money. But what Paul did is an ingenious twist, which is he started the study very like some people feel life starts, which is some people had a lot of money, or one player did, and other people had very little. So it was unequal. And what he found is that the person who by random assignment was given more money started to act like the proverbial, quote, fat cat, right? They kind of were kicking back and they interrupted people. And we put some food on the table and they took more of the food.
Right.
You know, it just set in motion this cycle of greed.
And when we come back, I want to talk about that study. And so the story goes, and boy, I walk around Berkeley all the time. And when I heard the reference made to the crosswalks of Berkeley are a great example of what's going on with income inequality, sirens, bells went off in my head, because it's true. Since I don't work until evening, early morning, or late morning, let's be honest, I walk around Berkeley. And sure enough, when I'm walking the crosswalks, it's the Mercedes and the Beamers who are ignoring the pedestrians 9 times out of 10. It's a very, very interesting study, and we'll continue our conversation with Professor Keltner. He is the co-director and creator of the Greater Good Science Center in Berkeley, and we'll continue this chat. Yes, you know, all things wealth and establishment here in America and the great income inequality. That is our day on KGOA 10.
Hi, Chip Franklin here. You know, summer's
Tune in and hang on. The Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
The Flying Lizards, right? Money from 1979. Money, that's what you want. Be careful what you wish for. You may become somewhat pompous.
The best things in life are free.
I'm not sure about that.
You can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
What a great lead-in as we go back to Professor Dacher Keltner from Berkeley. Is money what makes you happy? I don't think so. But it makes you happier.
You need a certain amount.
Right. As we chat about income inequality, Dr. Keltner, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you, and we were talking about this, and we talked about the social interaction and what was going on during that experiment on NewsHour, which is very interesting to watch. But you had said about that experiment that you found that people and with lower income people, they, and I think this is a great go-to point, they are more willing to share than those who have tons of money.
Yeah. And we've found that a number of times, and other labs have found it, and you see it in who gives to charity as well. So,
Are we finding out why that is by any chance?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, the sensible explanation is that when you are raised in a really poor neighborhood, and I grew up for part of my life in a very poor neighborhood, and this is true of how humans in general respond to threat and adversity, which is they form strong ties with the people around them. They connect.
Right.
And so in a lot of different studies, we have found that less wealthy people connect more strongly. They give more generously. They empathize with other people's emotions as a way to form strong bonds to face the adversities that's part of their life, the uncertain work and so forth.
Because they've been socialized to sort of lean on one another, and they've seen that behavior pattern repeated and that it works. That's my guess.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, we're talking about power and status. And one of the things, and you said that it affects every facet of social interaction. And I wanted to get to one of the things that you talk about, elevated power and what it leads to.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, one of the concerns people have about really unequal societies is that the powerful and the wealthy become unconstrained, right, because they have so much wealth and they live these cloistered lives. And there are observations out there that in unequal societies, people trust each other less. Kind of the healthy social fabric that makes a strong society starts to wear down. And our lab studies have... And studies of other people in different parts of the world have really lent credence to this idea. So, for example, just to work through a couple of examples, wealthier people are more likely to be rude at work to their fellow colleagues, swear, call them names, interrupt them. Wealthier people are more likely to violate the rules of polite speech, right? They kind of don't sort of practice indirectness and gentleness in speaking with people. There are even studies showing that wealthier people are, if you study who shoplifts from American stores, it's actually wealthier people.
What?
I know, it doesn't make any sense, but because they could buy what they're stealing, but that's what you find. And so what my lab did, and this is the study Drex was talking about, is we wondered if this had something to do with road rage and incivility on the road. So we first observed cars in the Bay Area of California arrive at four-way stops. And we just counted up, like, who would arrive after somebody who's waiting, but then decide to go in front of them and cut them off, right? And we found poor people driving poor cars, right, the Pinto or the Yugo or whatever, they never did it. People driving wealthier cars did it about 30% of the time. Then we upped the ante, and we stationed a Berkeley undergrad at a pedestrian zone. And it's California law that if you recognize a pedestrian, you got to stop. You know, it's safety, too. Once again, our poor cars rarely, if ever, did it. I think, you know, 0 to 10% of the time. And then our drivers of wealthier cars did it 30 to 40% of the time. Literally 4 or 5 times more than everybody else. So that just gives you a flavor of what inequality can do to just the the fabric of cooperative life.
I have to tell you, and now that you know the results of that study, just what he talked about, just do the crosswalk thing. Sometime you're in Berkeley or wherever you live, observe what happens in the crosswalk, and you'll see it for your own eyes, in front of your own eyes. It's an incredible thing. All right, I want to talk about, you talk about the detriments of power and status, and I wonder out loud here, is if what all of this is about, this greediness and lack of social interaction, is all about the paranoia of losing the power, the status, and the money.
Well, you know, we look at it a little bit differently, which is that, you know, what happens when you gain power is you feel this sense of purpose and you feel, you know, sort of excited and energetic and strong. And that activates certain parts of your brain and your body that make you go out and get things, right? And there are studies showing, you know, if you randomly give a person power, they're more likely to act in all sorts of ways. They will, you know, they'll sort of help somebody out. They'll take advantage. They'll sort of fix something in the room. And then they do a lot of impulsive, self-interested things, which is what our lab has documented. And so the real challenge, if you have power, and I think that this is a constant challenge in life, is to use it for good, you know, to make sure you stay focused on other people's interests and advancing the groups around you. And then I think power can be a positive thing, but all too often we don't do that.
Speaking of positive, would you mind, if you have time, if we could do one more segment? Because I want to ask you about your capturing of senior yearbook photographs and predicting.
Sure.
Power, money, greed, all of these. Oh, this is incredible insight. You'll love this. Don't go away. We are chatting with co-director of the Greater Good Science Center in Berkeley, Dr. Dacher Keltner, on the Drex Radio Show. And by the way, we have some people that want to talk to him. 808-0810. Stay right there. We'll continue the conversation coming up on KGO 810.
As we head into fall now.
We're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Well, that's pretty much what money does to you. Money, power, and status. That's what we're talking about, an income inequality. Thank you for joining us on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. We are chatting with Professor Dacher Keltner. He is the co-director of the Greater Good Science Center in Berkeley. And this is a very fun, I'm having a blast having this conversation. Money makes you less, I don't know, not the human being
empathetic.
That you're, yes, empathetic, yeah. Not the person your mom and dad really wanted you to be. Turns out, yeah, you know, I don't think that that was in the plan. And I, you know, when we think of money and people who have tons of it, I want to think of people like Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, very philanthropic, but
here, Africa, have $1 billion.
Right. He's the exception to the rule. He, you know, the Oprah factor is not the factor. That's playing out in America. As a matter of fact, listen to Bernie Sanders here. Let's play this.
99% of all new income is going to the top 1%. The top 0.1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. That is immoral and unsustainable.
Yes. It is. And we'll hear more about this tomorrow night on the Democratic debate. By the way, you can hear it live and local in the Bay starting around 5:30 tomorrow night. If you don't mind, Professor, I want to take a call here. David in Sacramento, you're on the Drex Radio Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you, David.
Okay, cool. Okay, here's the thing I want to make. The reason why, look at, when Obama was trying to run for presidency, they thought he was a socialist, and look at him now. So they keep on saying that every single time that, the reason why I know right off the bat that Bernie Sanders is going to win, because the fact of the matter is you're going to have to convince all the college students to vote for a Republican that their tuition is so damn high. And you know right off the bat the Republicans are not going to do a damn thing about that. So I hate to tell you, you know, I've been right about Mitt Romney. I've been right about the re-election of Obama twice. And I've been right about Mick Whitman. I hate to tell you, you know, they're pretty much despicable as far as the Republicans are concerned. They're not going to win. I'm going to tell you right now, they think that we don't have a brain, that we were born without a brain, that we're going to vote for Republicans. It's not going to happen.
All right, David, you motivate that student vote. Thank you. We need that.
And I think that, but unfortunately, I think what the strange, bizarre thing is that even on our side of the fence, we're thinking that Hillary is going to just bag this, at least our demo. Okay.
David says otherwise.
And David says otherwise. Professor, if you would comment, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think the caller has, you know, an impassioned and important point, which is that, you know, a lot of the studies show that these very wealthy politicians, as a function of their wealth, are out of touch with the average person, and they're not empathetic, as Hannah said, to what the person on the street is feeling and thinking about U.S. society. And there are lots of people who those politicians are underestimating who could produce really interesting electoral results, right? So I think it's dynamic and unpredictable.
Does it feel to you that people have lost the concept of rising tides lifting all boats because it's just more me, 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 grab, 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 money, money, money?
Yes.
Instead
I think it's a couple of things. You know, I think one is, and I think you're right in the broader sense, I think the first thing is the ideas about trickle-down economics that, you know, that somehow if the wealthy sectors of society generate a lot of wealth, that will trickle down to people below them. And that just has not proven to be the case the past 30 years. And it's not true in our studies, as I said. If you have a lot of wealth, you don't share as much. So how could trickle-down economics really work? And people are tired of that. And then the other thing is that most people in the United States, a lot of survey data show, want stronger facets of government. They want better public schools. They want better parks. They love their national parks, right? Parks mm-hmm. generate money for communities and so on. And yet our government does, and that's a classic stance of people in the middle class, is they appreciate how important their neighborhood is, how important that school is, how important the baseball field is.
And we want universal health care too. I mean, let's just
matters too, because their kid is sick, and that too is undervalued by the wealthier people around the country, just as our studies show.
Professor, I would be remiss if I did not go to, I love your study that you captured senior yearbook photos, and then you predicted, go ahead.
So we scored 110 college yearbook photos from the 50s from graduates of Mills College, and all we did is score how warm their smile was, that based on the activation of the muscle that pulls your lip corners up, and then the muscle that contracts around your eyes and gives you the crow's feet around the eyes. And the warmer women with warmer smiles, and this has been replicated with marriage announcements and other kinds of contexts, women with warmer smiles 30 years later, and they're 50, are feeling happier about life, they're less stressed out, they're accomplishing their goals more, and they're more likely to be happily married. And that fits this other line of work I do in my lab on all the kind of the positive emotional practices that we can engage in that make us happily connected to other people. And smiling is one of them.
It really is incredible. So, you know, this isn't something you can fix. I mean, if your yearbook photo was 3 or 4 decades ago, I don't know.
You can't fix that.
No, exactly. Right. And boy, might you want to run to the attic to look at it just to see, how'd this all work out? Let's take a look. Where is that damn thing? Yeah.
I know. And mine was a disaster.
Was it?
We found out. Yeah.
So there can be exceptions.
But what you can fix are all the small acts of kindness and generosity, smiling at people, making nice eye contact, pat them on the back. And those things matter a lot, as our study shows.
Have you looked at wealthy people, people in status, people in power, people who you consider greedy, you don't have to mention names, to look back at their high school or their college yearbooks and see them grimacing? Did you find that?
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
we have not looked at that. And
wow!
Oh my God! I'm Googling Dick Cheney, high school yearbook.
You'll see 2 horns, or 4 or 6,
and his famous sneer.
Oh my goodness gracious! Well, it's an incredible thing, and it certainly has been an eye-opening conversation. Especially as I mentioned, one of the biggest things that I think America is going to see tomorrow night, because I really think a lot of people have. I don't know if you're not, there's this funny, strange thing. And again, being a Democrat myself, and I was so passionate about getting Obama in there. I lived in Chicago. I knew the junior senator, you know, and I did fundraisers for him. And it was just the thrill of my life when he was elected president. But I don't feel that electric about Bernie Sanders, maybe because I went through that process. I don't know what your take on that, or I'm out of the demo. But I'm, well, but I agree with him. It's just the socialist word. I think kind of it doesn't scare me. It's just bold that he's saying it, I suppose.
Well, I would take him as a sign of the pendulum swinging, where our country is very tired of inequality.
And I accept that.
And broken down schools, and now we gotta whatever he ends up sort of calling himself. I think that the challenge is for the passion that is for whoever's elected, you know, maybe Hillary, to take that passion and convert it into good work.
Right.
Because it's there. And that's why he's so unlikely as a candidate, but he's doing spectacularly well. So that tells you something.
And I do hope that whatever comes out of this is if Hillary becomes the candidate, that she will find a place for him or at least listen to what he has to say, because Heather and I were discussing this earlier on the show. The two of them have not done any saber rattling whatsoever with each other's camp.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right, it is. It's notable. So it'll be an interesting play tomorrow night as we see what happens in Las Vegas.
He's nailing that populist thing to the wall.
Right, from the debate podium. Thank you very much, Professor. I love the conversation. And when we talk about income inequality, Dr. Keltner, I'd love to come back to you.
I'll be here.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks
a great week. All right. It's time for me to take a break, and when we come back, the good news. And in addition to the good news, let's talk about the Rolling Stones. We're going to have some fun for at least, you know,
I love the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, yes.
And I watched the Keith Richards documentary last night.
I have a story about him.
Really?
Dissing some other big
rock
groups. Yeah.
Oh, he was so friendly and charming in the whole documentary.
Oh, he is.
But,
he's charming. How old is he now? 76?
That's a good question.
73?
Oh, I'll Google that, and we'll tell you in the next segment. P.S. Dick Cheney was a handsome young man.
Oh.
I found it. I'll
then
tweet it.
Then there's that.
Generation Drex. You'll see the picture there.
More to come on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Hi, John Bristow here. Are you...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.